Welcoming to the show quite a gentleman who's had a career that has spanned nearly 50 years. Along the way, he's directed over 1,000 episodes of network television, has won some 10 Emmy Awards, and has guided the fortunes of some of the greatest shows in television history. Taxi, Cheers, Night Court, Frasier, Friends, Will and Grace, Mike and Molly. He's the author of a wonderful new book directed by James Burroughs. We're pleased to be joined by James Burroughs. Thanks for being with us.
Happy to be there.
I love this book so much. It was like spending some quality time, well, with old friends I've never actually met.
I hope you get to meet those people in person someday.
Well, it's a wonderful story, and yours is such a fascinating one. Your father, Abe, a legend, and I'm a high school theater director, so I have a fondness for his work and some great stories about him in there. I especially liked his way of signaling Bobby Morris that it was time to back off a little bit during How to Succeed.
My dad had a Bobby Morris, who was wonderful in How to Succeed, in the run, as actors do when their show is successful and they have to play a performance every week, they tend to embellish or, put in their improvements. And my dad used to go in the back of the theater and check out the show. And Bobby, who was really gifted, but put a lot of filigree upon filigree. And my dad had a little pen light. And so if you're an actor looking out into the audience, you mainly see just darkness. You know, you're also blinded by the spotlights that are on you. But my dad, Abe, if he thought Bobby was over the line, he'd blink his little pen light and Bobby could see it and Bobby would back down and take out his improvements. So my dad was, it was not a hostile relationship with Bobby. It just was. And, as I said, as an actor doing 8 shows a week, you have to invent stuff to keep you interested. And that's what Bobby did.
Well, you obviously took a lot from your father, a love of music, which led you to several years performing with the Metropolitan Opera's Children's Chorus. But it seems like from the book, the greatest gift was that sense of rhythm, the rhythm of comedy that allowed both your dad and you to be able to close your eyes and hear those beats that make comedy work.
Yeah, my dad, when he was doing a straight play or a straight comedy without music, he would walk behind the scenery. And if he heard pauses, he knew nobody was dancing, so he was in trouble. So he would listen to the rhythms. And when I do my shows, I do sit in front of the cast and in behind the cameras. And there are moments when I don't watch the video screens and I just listen to the rhythms and try to make sure the rhythms are okay and try to protect a joke. If an actor screws up a line on a way to the joke, I will jump in and I'll go bop, 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 like that. So the audience doesn't hear the joke told the wrong way, because 90% of humor is surprise. So if they hear the joke the wrong way, when they tell the joke the right way, they're not going to laugh as hard.
Your dad also, when you were in college at Oberlin, sent you The Button-Down Mind of Bob Newhart and The 2,000-Year-Old Man. That's pretty good start to building a comedy career.
Yes, I was the hit of Barrow's dorm. My dad sent me these records, and my college friends would come to my small room just to hear. Newhart was, he was a killer back then. And The 2,000-Year-Old Man is probably, with Carl and Mel, is probably one of the funniest records I ever had. And to be able to work with Bob Newhart, decades later, was a thrill for me. And the first show I did with Bob, I was just such a fan. Telling him how The Button-Down Mind had made me more popular in college. But Bob is a wonderfully gracious man.
You did stage work. You worked on Broadway. I love the June Allison story, but I want people to read the book to read about that. But you you also made a key connection there, working on Breakfast at Tiffany's. I would say serving to largely comfort Mary Tyler Moore every night.
I was it was my my first job on Broadway. I was the assistant to the assistant stage manager on an ill-fated musical called Breakfast at Tiffany's that my dad wrote. It was not his best work. My dad was, we went out of town with Mary Tyler Moore and Richard Chamberlain, Laura Petrie and Dr. Kildare. And I was in charge of them. I was, they were from California. They didn't know their way around a stage. So I was in charge of making sure they knew when to enter and were there for their cues and everything like that. I would run lines with them. And we were out of town. The show was a big hit. And when we came back into town, David Merrick decided to get rid of my father and hire somebody else to write the show and somebody else to direct it. And I said to my dad, "Can I stay on the Titanic?" And he said, "That was fine." So I would, you know, when we rehearsed a new show in New York and then we opened for previews, and in the initial preview, we were hooted off the stage. The audience hated us. And Mary would come off after a scene and she'd, you know, collapse in my arms crying because she was so intimidated by an audience talking back to her. So we made a connection then. And I used that about 10 years later.
Yeah, you were watching TV. The Mary Tyler Moore Show came on and that inspired you to write a letter, and that resulted in you directing not only some episodes of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, but to the Bob Newhart Show.
Yeah, I wrote her. I was directing Joan Fontaine in 40 Carats in Wallingford, Connecticut. And I came home on a Saturday and I turned on the TV and there was the Mary Tyler Moore Show. I had never watched it before. And I looked at it and I say, well, I know Mary. And look, they're doing 25-minute theater production in a week, and I'm doing a 2-hour theater production in a week. So I figured that maybe I could do that. So I wrote her a letter, and two weeks later, Grant Tinker, her husband, who ran the company, MTM, called me and said, "We're very interested in theatrical directors. Can we bring you out to do one show?" And it was the quickest yes I've ever said in my life.
We're talking with James Burrows here on Downtown. Can you talk about the role the great Jay Sandrich played in your career?
The great and late Jay Sandrich, unfortunately, passed away this year. Mm-hmm. Jay was directing the Mary Tyler Moore Show when I observed it. Yeah, you know, you can, when you come out to do work in situation comedy as a theater director, you have to learn the cameras. You have to learn how to cover the action because you are literally filming a play. So I spent 4 months watching cameras, and I went to watch the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and Jay Sandrich, a legend, was directing the show. And we became friends, and he took me under his wing, and I could ask him any questions I wanted. And he was instrumental in my career. He just, he was a wonderfully sweet man.
You moved on to help start Taxi, which is just one of the great shows of all time, a brilliant cast, but as you point out in the book, maybe one of your most challenging jobs.
Yeah, it was the first show that I was a resident director on. I was hired from the pilot, and I did, I think, of the first 75 episodes, I did 74. And, you know, I didn't have a lot of, my resume was not that great. I was brought in by Jim Brooks and Ed Weinberg, Stan Daniels and Dave Davis, who created the show. They knew me from my work at Mary Tyler Moore. So, and so they brought me in, and it was the first time we used 4 film cameras regularly. On all the MTM shows, there were only 3 film cameras because economically it was better because you didn't have film right rolling through a fourth camera for 2 hours. So the 4 camera technique was a lot different than 3 cameras. It was a big, huge set. And I'd like to say the cast was interplanetary. It was a group of individuals who, you know, predominantly they came from the theater. Danny and Judd and Mary Lou and Jeff Conaway were theater rats. Right. But Tony Danza was a boxer. Andy Kaufman was not really a stand-up. He was a performance artist. So I had to mold these people into a group that a homogeneous group that would function as a great cast on television.
From there, you teamed up with Glenn and Les Charles, the brothers, as you refer to them in the book, for one of the great series of all time, 11 years. And I can't think of an episode that wasn't terrific of Cheers. And you guys were fans of Fawlty Towers. You thought about setting the show perhaps in a hotel, but eventually you landed on a bar, Shades of Duffy's Tavern.
Yeah, my dad's show. He was the head writer on Duffy's Tavern. It was interesting when we started Cheers. Anytime you start a show like that, you get lawsuits. You know, you stole my idea, you did this, that's my character. So we got a number of lawsuits, and I would always say to people suing who had written shows about bars, I said, get in line behind my dad, because he can sue me. He should sue me first. The boys, you know, a lot of comedy writers don't come from Henderson, Nevada, but the brothers were born in Henderson, Nevada. And we hooked up on Taxi and then we had the same agent. And he said, you guys should do a show. So we made a deal with NBC and we did Cheers. And it was a wonderful experience. It was, we birthed a baby and we were all proprietary about the show. We were all fathers of the show. They were gracious enough to give me co-created credit, even though they wrote the show. It was us, the three of us, breaking away because we were under the influence of all these wonderful writers. I'd worked with Jim Brooks, Alan Burns, Dan Daniels, Patchett and Tarsus, all these people. So this was our first show, and it turned out to be a wonderful success that, well, you know, it's still my favorite show of all time that I've ever done.
And the first instance of what you call the Jimmy Burrows curse, these unknown actors who go on to become superstars.
Yeah, it was a little bit on Taxi, too. You know, the only one who was kind of known was Judd. Judd, you know, was a relatively well-known actor. But no, Cheers was all unknowns. We, you know, our first guest star on Cheers was Tip O'Neill, who was then Speaker of the House. So that gives you a little idea about what we felt about, you know, having you know, actors with stature on the show, because I felt and the boys felt that if you introduce people to actors you've never seen before and they become successful on your show, the audience feels proprietary about them because they feel like they have developed this actor into a television star. So they're more invested in the show. So I've most of the shows, you know, like 95-96% of shows I've ever done are with all unknown actors, because that's what I like. I like to form them into a homogeneous group that in rehearsal love one another. They get on with one another, and that transcends across the screen. And so, you know, Taxi, Friends. Frasier had a character from Taxi. He was the known character. Everybody else was unknown. And Will and Grace and Big Bang and all those shows, it's the same thing. And, you know, I love that because in my mind, if you have a comedic star in your show that is known, when you cut to him, you know he's going to say something funny. So an element of the surprise is lost. So that's why I like these unknown people.
I thought it was really interesting. You talk about the transition that Kelsey Grammer made from going from one of the strange characters, the outliers in Cheers, to being the center on Frasier, and what an adjustment that required, and how much it spoke volumes about his acting ability.
Yeah, he's an amazing actor, Kelsey. I mean, for 9 years on Cheers, he played a buffoon. You know, this comical, egocentric doctor who spouted, you know, Schopenhauer references and Kierkegaard references. And what the boys did, Angel, Casey, and Lee, who created that show and asked if they could spin off Kelsey, what they did was they made Kelsey Sam Malone on Frasier, hired David Hyde Pierce to be Frasier on Frasier. And it's a tribute to their skill, but it's also a tribute to the ability that Kelsey Grammer has to become a center of a show after playing a buffoon on a show for 9 years. He was a gifted enough actor to be the windows that the audience sees the show through. And that's a tribute to his extraordinary talent.
You've said that Will and Grace might be the funniest show you've done, that when you look at laughs per minute, never better than that.
No, it was crazy, that show. You know, the Max Muchnick and David Cohen created it, and the jokes were rat-a-tat-tat. I mean, and all four of them could do a joke. All four of them, in the jokes were particular to their character. Like Eric couldn't do a Grace joke because it wouldn't look good on his character. So we did, there was Eric jokes and Deb jokes and Sean jokes and Megan killer jokes. So they were just extremely talented. So there were just jokes like you couldn't do on any other show.
I love, and this is a little behind the scenes inside baseball thing, but I love reading about how you took your work in theater and the idea of using different levels on a set, and what a difference that made in so many of your shows.
Yeah, it's in the theater, it helps to have levels, you know, just to get the audience eyes to look up and maybe down and stuff like that. In television, it's not done so often. But for me, being a theater rat, I like levels. You know, if you're watching a television screen, you're not going to look up when the character walks up the stairs. You're still looking at the boob tube. You know, your eyes, but maybe your eyes move a little bit, you know, and it just, especially in Will and Grace, the kitchen was two steps up from the living room. So you had, you know, when Will was cooking, he was looking down at Jack or down at Grace. And so it just adds an element of making it a little different than just a completely flat stage.
Great stories, too, about Billy Gardell and how willing he was to work with you. And isn't that what you look for as a director, those people that are willing to take chances and want to be a big part of that collaborative effort?
I love actors that kiss the ring. And Billy, you know, Billy is a dear friend and also one of the great straight men, because he was the windows that you watched that show through. It wasn't so much Melissa. It was because Mike loved Melissa. And that was your entree to the show was Billy. And I found he was one of the few guys. Well, there are a couple others, but Billy was great delivering a joke sitting down. So I have what's known as Gardell blocking, which is I used to bring Billy in, sit him on a couch, and everybody would pivot around him. And Billy would do jokes from that. And it's in my vernacular now. And actors have said to me, what's Gardell blocking? And I'll tell them, you bring him in, you sit him down, and he does all the jokes from there, and he scores. It was, you know, I gave Billy his first job. He had one line on a pilot I did called Queens. And I said, and I gave him a note that he was broadcasting his line, his one line. So that was my first direction to him. But he's a dear friend and a wonderful human being.
How did you become the pilot whisperer? What's the count up to now? Well over 50 pilots, right?
I've done over 100.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
And I think 75 of them have got on the air. So some of them with a modicum of success, and some of them were, you know, huge hits.
What keeps your creative juices flowing after nearly 50 years of directing?
Laughter. I believe the Norman Cousins syndrome. You know, Norman Cousins was a man who was given a death sentence with a certain disease. I don't remember the name of it, but he said to the people in the hospital, "Can you bring me all the Marx Brothers movies you can have, all the Fields movies you can have, I can have, and will you run them on my television?" And they ran him, and he laughed, and he gained many years and added many years to his life through laughter. And if you I've worked with Norman Lear the last couple of years, and he will also maintain that laughter is important to keeping you young. And so that's why I do it. I, the Will and Graces, there were laughs, but I was still nervous before every show, you know, flop sweat, and then it's just such a high when an audience goes crazy for a show that it hopefully has added years to my life.
You know, Perry Gilpin is a great friend of our show. She comes on a lot. Our listeners voted her the favorite guest of our show. Have you got a good Perry story that we can maybe give her a hard time about next time she's on?
Well, you know how, has she told you how she got the part on Frasier?
Well, she didn't want to talk about Lisa Kudrow at all. She wanted to move on from that quickly.
Well, I'm just saying it benefited two actresses.
Right.
Yeah. So a story about Perry. Have you seen her husband's paintings?
I have not.
Oh, my God. She is married to a guy named Christian Vincent, who is a wonderful artist. We have a couple of his works hanging in our house. And, she has twins.
Know that. We're off to college now.
Off to college. But they, you know, when I started working with her, there were no kids. So now there are, you know, kids. And she was also on a Cheers. Did she tell you that?
Right. And then was it the Lupe Valdez story that proved to be the difference maker, right?
Right. The Roz Doyle, the character she eventually played, had to be strong and affirmative with Kelsey. And that was not Lisa's colors. And it turned out great for both of them. And I'm friendly with them both, and Lisa has forgiven me, and Perry keeps thanking me. But they knew Perry because Peter and David, and David knew Perry because she had done a Cheers. So.
And there was a real Roz Doyle.
Yes. Unfortunately, she passed away when the boys, Angel Casey and Lee, were doing Wings, which was their first show. There's a story in... It's become vernacular. There's vernacular things like people, when they're doing sitcoms now, talk about doing a Sam and Diane relationship, which is in the vernacular. And there's also the story of that show's My Wings, which meant that Angel Casey and Lee, the first show they did on their own was Wings. And then they did, which was moderately successful, mm-hmm. And then they did Frasier. So people will come in and talk to studios and everything, like, say, who have done, you know, a middle show that's not great. And they'll say, "That's My Wings." Okay. So the next show will be My Frasier. So that's, Roz was the producer of Wings.
Well, the book is absolutely wonderful. Directed by James Burroughs. Jim, thank you so much for 50 years of joy and laughter that you've brought to so many of us. It's a real treat for us to get to talk with you today.
Thank you for taking me downtown.
Thanks again. Jimmy Burroughs with us here on Downtown.